hoping that you understand. You ain't the man to tell you in demand. Just pray to God we keep you in the plan. You ain't the man to tell you in it.
Hey there, welcome to Time Out with Ty, episode 49. We're here this week to talk Bucks. Now that the NBA season is coming back, Time Out with Ty is no longer a Bucks podcast. It used to be, it used to have the facade of being a Bucks podcast. I don't know if it ever really was. It's not at all now, but I'm still trying to do a lot of Bucks stuff because if you've ever listened before, you can probably tell it's my team. I'm from Milwaukee, born and raised, so it's the team I enjoy watching. So I like talking Bucks. I cover the Bucks at Behind the Buck Pass. So to talk Bucks this preseason eve on a Friday, I've brought BTBP staff writer Adam Kaufman to the show. Adam's one of our up-and-coming prospects. How's it going, Adam?
It's going good. How about you?
I'm doing well. I'm spending my Friday night doing a podcast, which at first, like, it sounds like I'm, you know, sarcastically saying, oh, I'm doing a podcast on Friday night. I love doing podcasts, so I'm doing great. Every time I get to do one of these, I'm having a good time. Have you done podcasts before? Is this your first pod?
First time being a guest. I've done, recorded a couple of my own, but, yeah, first time being on somebody else's.
That's fun. Was it Bucks Pods or something else?
Generally more, Kansas City focused, cause that's where I'm out. So we've done Chiefs and Royals, but I like to cover the Bucks cause they're my team, obviously.
Okay. So were you born in Milwaukee and did you move out there? I want to hear about your Bucks fandom before we get going.
I get this a lot cause there's little to none Bucks fans out in Kansas where I live. I became a Bucks fan in 2012 because of the NBA 2K12 video game.
Oh, amazing.
I made my Mario career, and that was the team I was put on. And at that point, I didn't have an NBA team, and I thought, why not choose the Bucks? And they've been my team ever since.
I love stories like this. So have you ever been to Milwaukee?
Last year during spring break, I did come up and watch a game, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Which one did you catch?
They're playing the Cavs. They lost by a lot.
Yeah, that'll happen when they play the Cavs. Awesome though. I like the, you know, it's fine if you're like a hometown fan like me. Like, there's obviously nothing wrong with that. But I always enjoy hearing the, you know, Adam from Kansas City became a fan because of 2K stories. I think those are I love video games for that reason. Sports video games, because you just get these like random fandoms that just like spring up.
Uh huh.
So we're going to talk some Bucks today. I don't know how much of this you've been following, but apparently, according to Kurt Hellen's article linked to a Mark Stein tweet, or a Mark Stein article, or Mark Stein basically wrote or said that the Bucks tried to trade MCW for Ben McLemore straight up and Vlade Divac or Nod them, Sacramento's general manager or whatever title he has now. First off, I'm not going to ask if you think that really happened. Mark Stein is one of the most reliable, if not the most reliable reporter out there, so we can probably assume it did. How do you feel about the apparently proposed trade by the Bucks?
I'm pretty thankful that Vlade did what he did. I wouldn't have been in favor of that particular deal. I know looks like we need some backcourt depth, but I think MCW is just too much to give up for a guy like McLemore.
Yeah, we come in exactly the same. I wrote this today, basically in response to that idea of a trade. It's like I don't want to say everyone into a straw man, but the argument I've seen out there is that McLemore is important because he provides spacing and the Bucks desperately need that right now. It's like, all right, fair. They certainly do need spacing. But if you look at what Middleton brings to the Bucks, if you break it down, three things. He brings spacing, obviously. He's the best 3-point shooter on the team. He brings great defense, which is something McLemore does not bring at all. And he also brings like ball handling ability, distribution ability. Middleton was the secondary ball handler for the Bucks at times last year. At times he was the primary ball handler. I mean, he's really good at distributing the ball, not doing a lot of turnovers. He can handle it if necessary. That's not something Ben McLemore can do either. He's never had more assists than turnovers in an NBA season thus far in his career. So if you look at which of MCW or McLemore could replace what Middleton provides better, McLemore doesn't play the defense. McLemore doesn't have the passing ability. MCW has both of those, but he doesn't have the spacing. Neither of them can obviously fill in for all of what Middleton does. But if you ask me, I think MCW is a closer approximation. He just lacks the outside shot, which of course is the focal point for the Bucks for years now. Literally years has been there's not enough outside shooting. We need more outside shooting. It's become an obsession, and for good reason. But I don't think it's wise to punt a better player for a lesser one just because the lesser one just happens to be better at shooting. That's the one thing. Like, I wouldn't want to trade MCW for, like, Anthony Morrow. Anthony Morrow's a better shooter, but what else does he do? Like, you need to look at players as complete packages, not just, oh, but he can shoot.
Yeah, and especially with, obviously it looks like it's only going to be a year that Middleton's out. I think it'd be really short-sighted to give up a greater asset for a lesser one just to fill a hole in a year where you're probably not going to make the playoffs anyway. I feel like that's just really a short-sighted mentality.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a panic trade is what it screams panic trade. I mean, Ben McLemore, and this is from someone, I like Ben McLemore. I covered the Kings before I came back to Behind the Buck Pass, and I've always thought Ben McLemore has potential. He's fun, he's athletic. But I mean, if you look at where he's at right now, he's 2 years younger than MCW, although they've been in the league for the same amount of time. They have roughly this, I think McLemore's played more minutes, but MCW scored more because he's just more of an effective player in general. I'd see that there is upside, but I don't like when you look at, you know, a guy and just go, oh, well, he's still going to get there. Like, it's been 3 years. Like, look how far Giannis has come in 3 years. Like, you're not going to see a guy go from year three to year four and all of a sudden he's a lockdown defender. I just don't see it. And you can blame some of this, like, his shortcomings on Sacramento. That's fine. But, like, players have been good for the Kings since his, like, Boogie Cousins is still good, even though his team is just a flaming pile of molten garbage. Like, you can still be good on a bad team. Look at Kevin Love with the Timberwolves. So I don't buy that he's this potential packed player, especially if you're going to say MCW's not, just because he's a couple years older, even though they've had the same amount of NBA experience. And MCW's probably had less off seasons due to injuries, I'd say. McLemore had minor injury stuff last year. His first 2 years, he played 82 games both years. I just don't see, like you said, I think MCW is the superior asset. He's better now. I don't see why he wouldn't be better later, too.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I'm not a huge follower of the Kings, so forgive me if I'm wrong here, but I'm looking at McLemore's stats, and I'm seeing, I know you talked about the injuries he had, but basically every per-game category has fallen off by quite a bit. Minutes are down 32 to 21. Scoring's down 12 to 7.8. And he was down to just 1 3-pointer made per game last year. So if you're looking at, oh, well, he's the better shooter and that fills a need, 36% last year, that's good, but not great. So I don't even think that even might be exaggerated in terms of what he will bring to fill a need.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is George Karl was still their coach last year, and it's like good luck guessing what the fuck George Karl is going to do with a team these days. Still not over George Karl basically initiating the Ray Allen trade. I'll never be over that. He wanted Boogie to get traded so bad. Like, I'm so sure of it. This is completely unrelated. But I was covering the Kings during their most tumultuous summer, or one of them. There's been a lot of tumultuous summers there. But I guarantee Karl was trying to get Boogie traded. And I wrote, like, my most overblown dramatic piece ever. And it was, like, this, like, gaudy title about how George Karl's trying to dethrone DeMarcus Cousins or something like that. It's so true. I mean, it's like, this is completely off topic. I'm gonna get back to topic before I get completely lost here. He lost his starting job, I'm talking about McLemore now, to Marco Bellinelli last year, and Bellinelli had one of his worst seasons of his career. I don't know how much of that is on George Karl just doing George Karl shit. I have no idea. But it isn't promising. And I think he is an alright solution for the Middleton problem. I wrote about potential McLemore trades. And essentially what I wrote, and this was before these rumors came out, so I'm super proud of myself for this, but what I wrote is that MCW for McLemore works in salary, but I don't like the trade from the Bucks' perspective. I would want something thrown in. The Kings can't do that. They've traded too many first-round picks. I believe the first one they could send, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm not, is a 2021 first, which at this point, I don't even know if you're allowed to trade picks that far ahead. I'm not sure how that works. Basically, they're handcuffed. They couldn't do anything besides a one-for-one swap, and apparently they turned it down. I'm with you, like you said, from the jump. Thank goodness Vlade turned it down. I think MCW is the better player. He doesn't really fit into any one position, but I don't care. I think he's a good basketball player, and especially if you don't need him to start, like, just go let him do his stuff. He's like a 14-6-6 guy. Like, that's great. Like, that's really usable.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the, I think, 2021 draft pick. That's basically an eighth grader is what you're trading for in that case right now. So, and with MCW, I think I have trouble with this too, is you want to sell low on him based on the year he had last year. And you say, well, it's just not going to work on Milwaukee based on the numbers he had. But I think obviously this year he's going to have a different role in that Dellavedova will start and he'll come off the bench. And the biggest problem a lot of people had with him last year, I think, was that he would shoot too much, and that was taking shots away from Giannis and Jabari, guys that you want to have the ball in their hands, and that he couldn't shoot, which just further, you know, clogged things up for those guys. And I think if he's playing with a bench unit that has, you know, guys like Toledovich or even Novak or Vaughn or Brogdon, guys who can shoot a little bit, he's going to have more freedom to handle the ball more, to get put in more advantageous situations. So I think I'd rather see him in that role before I just look to sell low.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think sixth man is going to be perfect for him, because you look at it, the best probably run of his career was with Philly early on. And Philly's team at that point was essentially like a second unit, like their starters. The caliber of players was a bench unit. So I think you put MCW on the floor and you take the stars away. Like, when Giannis and Jabari get tired, you can stagger or whatever. But instead of putting him with the starters, you know, put MCW out there with Mirza Teletovic and Greg Monroe for a few more months, or a few more days, maybe, according to a report we'll get to. And, you know, these other bench guys like Rashad Vaughn, or he might start now too. This season's already just rough. Michael Beasley is one guy he'll be out there with. Like, you don't mind MCW taking touches from Michael Beasley and Mirza Teletovic. Like, you're not gonna lose sleep over that. It does suck to see Giannis standing in the corner, or Chris Middleton all by himself, and MCW's floundering the ball around the rim. Or it's always fun to see what verb I use for MCW driving. But that's one thing. But letting him do it with the bench, and he's not bad. That's the thing. Marcus Johnson was essentially tweeting to this regard earlier. He's a good player. He does a lot of really good things on the court. He just doesn't. Like, you can't put him in any boxes, because then he'll look worse. You can't expect him to play shooting guard because he can't shoot. As one enlightened tweeter pointed out to me, he can't play shooting guard because he can't shoot. Well, yeah, I guess big Giannis can't play small forward then. You can't really put him at point guard because he's a high usage player. He's not going to play the game like Mike Conley, or more apt of a comparison, Jason Kidd. But he's just a really good basketball player. If you throw him out there and let him go, he's going to do good things.
In a year where he missed close to 30 games, I think, last year, he still put up 11.5 points a game, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists. With that, I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at, especially when you're playing in a situation that's so difficult to him to succeed in with the lack of spacing the Bucks had. I think it's interesting you brought up Monroe. The Bucks sort of have two guys that would be legitimate sixth men, and Monroe and Michael Carter-Williams, because you could see Plumlee and Dele starting over them. So I think that's what's going to make the bench better. Then obviously last year the bench was fairly atrocious. That's what's going to make the bench better, more so than the signing of guys like Toledovich or the Beasley trade, I think.
I think you're right, but I think it's interesting and potentially worrying that Kurt Hellen, and now I have this right, from NBC Sports Talk, or I think that's what it's called, the NBC basketball thing, Pro Basketball Talk, maybe that's it. Whatever, Kurt Hellen wrote today that the Bucks are looking to trade one or both of MCW Monroe by this weekend, which is now, essentially.
Yeah.
I see, this is where, and I did a mailbag today, and I got separate questions from separate people. One said, what would you give up to get rid of MCW? What would you give up to get rid of Monroe? For my answer for both of them, I said nothing. Like, I don't see why the onus is on the Bucks to need to get rid of either of those players. I mean, you look at Monroe, is he expensive? Yes. Is he ridiculously expensive? I don't think so. Not in this cap. They're a little over the salary cap right now, but the Bucks are not in tax territory. So, and if he looks energized right now, this isn't like a Markieff Morris situation where it looked like he wouldn't even play. He looked good in the first preseason game. He was maybe the most effective Buck in that game. I don't see the necessity to drop him like a bad habit. If there's a deal out there and you can get some cap relief, then sure. but I would not package anything to get rid of him. Same for MCW, especially. MCW is super underpaid if you look at the contract values. You can play him as a sixth man. He's not a chemistry problem. I don't see a necessity to move either guy. I could see moving either of them if you can bring in a player who fits better, but I don't think it needs to be something the Bucks are driven to do just for the sake of moving them.
Yeah, I agree with that. It shouldn't just be a dump just to dump them. I especially am in favor of keeping Michael Carter-Williams because he'll be a restricted free agent after this year, which means you sort of have this phenomenon where if you like what he does this year, you can basically keep him if you want, depending on what offers he gets. Or if you don't, you can just not give him the qualifying offer and just let him go. And with Monroe, I would lean towards trading him more than Michael Carter-Williams for a couple reasons. One, it's likely he'll be gone after this year. I don't see him taking his player option next year. And two, I feel like his exit would bring a little more clarity towards the roles of John Henson and Miles Plumlee, and that, you know, they could have more opportunity. But I agree that it shouldn't be a salary dump or just take this guy off our hands in any way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still thoroughly convinced if they wanted to give up Monroe for nothing, they could have given him to Dallas before Andrew Bogut became available this summer. Like, you look at Dallas had nothing at the center position. They would have taken, they probably would still take Greg Monroe for free. Maybe not now. But, like, there's teams out there who would certainly take a free Greg Monroe. He's an effective basketball player. I would say the Nets, they already have Brook Lopez. But, like, there's just teams who just, they don't have much going, so why not? You know, like, why would they not say, sure, we'll pay him $17 million and give you a protected second-round pick or some lifeless bench body or whatever we've got. We'll find a way to make salaries work, whatever. Like, they could have given him away by now. I'm thoroughly convinced of that. The Bucks want something, I'm hoping. And what I'm worried about is that now with this Middleton injury, and John Hammond has said the Bucks are not currently looking for a deal. The reports we're all hearing are contrary to that. But what I'm worried about is that now the team feels like they need to make this deal more than ever, and that they're going to do whatever they can to find someone, which is a worrying proposition considering, A, some of the past trades we've seen, especially some of the past salary dumps we've seen, which saw Jared Dudley, Ersan Ilyasova, and Zaza Pachulia go out for nothing, and B, considering, like, this team isn't ready to contend right now anyway. Like, I don't see... I want to make the playoffs, yes, of course. That makes sense. But I don't think it's, like, time to panic and rent a shooting guard for 1 year just to have them leave and the Bucks still... I don't know how big the needle's going to turn depending on who they get. Like, I don't see any player coming in and all of a sudden the Bucks are winning 50 games. Like, it's just not happening.
Yeah, the Bucks are sort of they've got such a unique identity with Giannis running the point that it's really tough to plug any player in a major role and say, "Okay, look, this is we're right back to, you know, square one where we were with Middleton." Cuz with Middleton, obviously, like you said, you got a guy that can defend. A guy that can shoot, a guy that can facilitate. And I don't think there's anybody else that's gettable on the market like that. I mean, so, and then you talked about, like, obviously you think the Bucks want to get equal value for them. Well, I agree. And I think they've basically been shopping, if we can believe the reports we're seeing, they've been shopping him since last year's trade deadline. And the fact that a deal hasn't been done between now and then goes to tell me, like you said, they're trying to get something for him. And also, the market's not great out there for players like him. I mean, there's only a couple teams that people have said, I mean, there's a chance he might get traded here, like the Pelicans. But, I mean, I think we've gone through it. It's really tough to make that deal work salary-wise.
Yeah.
So I agree with you on both points there.
The thing about the Pelicans is, like, some of these teams, the fit doesn't make sense. That's a lot of them, really. The ones like the Pelicans, and I think the Kings, too, they just don't have anything I want, particularly. I mean, we've heard reports... And these are old reports. I don't know if they still stand. But, like, last year's trade deadline, or this past February, this trade deadline, like, I read that Dell Demps wasn't allowed to deal first-round picks by himself anymore. That he was, like, they were, like, locked in the liquor cabinet next to the schnapps. I don't know details about that. I don't follow the Pelicans on a daily basis. But considering every wing player on their roster seems to be hurt right now, unless they're going to cough up Buddy Hield, I don't see what the Pelicans are going to give up that the Bucks really care about for Greg Monroe. I talked about in February maybe the horrible, awful, not good Ashiq contract plus picks. Not pick, picks. I wanted more than one because that contract is awful. I don't think the Pelicans would go that far to get rid of it, and I don't even know if their GM is allowed to. But you look at, like, Sacramento. They can't deal any picks. As far as young players besides McLemore, you've got Papayani or Papayanis or whatever, the guy nobody heard of until they took him way too high. They also have Willie Cauley-Stein. The problem with both of those guys is they're big men. The Bucks don't need any more of those. They're set. They have their three centers now, plus Thon, who could see minutes at center. You could maybe slot Teletovic up there. Who knows? Giannis could probably play a little center. Like, their problem isn't getting more big guys. So now you look at teams with a lot of wings. It's like Boston. They have Al Horford. I don't really see, unless they wanted to bring Monroe off the bench and use him that way. I don't, if anyone could figure out a great way to use Greg Monroe, it would be Brad Stevens. I just don't know. Other teams like San Antonio could use some more young big guys, maybe, but they have LaMarcus Aldridge and Pau Gasol already. And they, again, they don't have the assets. Like, a Spurs pick, you know, is going to be mid to low 20s or high 20s or however you want to look at it. It's not going to be a great draft pick. So I just, it's tough. My favorite destination for him was Portland. And while Mo Harkless was still a restricted free agent, I really wanted a Mo Harkless sign trade. It was always rumored he would make around the same as Monroe in the new cap. I thought, wow, that works for both teams. Portland's always like really like Greg Monroe. I don't know why exactly, but they have. And Mo Harkless is someone the Bucks, at least we over at Behind the Buck Pass, have always liked. I think that's an overpay for Mo Harkless, but I'd rather have another good wing player than another center, even if he is a good one. But now that he's been signed, he couldn't be traded till December. And that's one thing that'll hold up a lot of trades, is that anyone who just got signed to a new contract can't be moved until mid-December, which doesn't help moving guys right now either.
Yeah, I've got a friend who's a Celtics fan. I've tried to get him to play Let's Make a Deal. And I don't know if he speaks for all Celtics fans, but he doesn't want Monroe at all, which, yeah. I can sort of see if you're just looking at the last season he had. Boston doesn't really have a true center. I think Horford, Amir Johnson might be their best example of a real big guy. But even Monroe might not be that guy you're looking for there. And Horford's a good defender, but maybe not a great rim protector. And obviously Monroe's, not great in that regard.
Yeah.
So the market's really tough in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, like, everyone has a big guy they'd probably like to get rid of right now. Like, I don't know if they're actively shopping him, but I think Brooklyn would be very receptive to moving Brook Lopez if somebody wanted him. You've got other, like, just, it feels like if there's a guy on a crazy contract right now, it's probably a center, just because a lot of these deals were signed just as or just before the Warriors sort of reinvented what five-man lineups can look like. And now teams are learning that you can get away with less than one center in a lineup more than you can get away with more than one. Like, it's easier to get away with a couple versatile forwards like the Warriors do than it is playing two, like, 7-foot centers next to each other, because teams are going to run up and down the court on you. You're going to get shot all over. You're not going to be able to cover the perimeter. It just won't work these days. And that's obviously a huge shift from years ago when, like, I did a lot of research on Kareem this summer for our History Month. And or this fall or whatever, whenever it was, but it was like the great quote from the Lakers owner or general manager or whatever was, we need centers, like, we tried with Wilt, now we need another, so we're gonna go get Kareem. That's the only way to win titles. That's not how the game goes anymore. It's not about centers these days. So these teams are ending up with all these centers that when they sign them or just after they sign them, it seemed like, we need this big guy, it's super important. It's just not as important anymore. Like, great teams don't rely on centers for a lot of their scoring anymore. We're in a whole new NBA where a lot of these post-up centers are bench guys. I mean, you look at Nikola Vucevic, you look at Enes Kanter, Greg Monroe now. They're all guys who don't even start anymore, regardless of being really good post-scoring threats. Teams want centers that can defend and rebound, especially if they can shoot. That's even better. So, yeah, I mean, the market is, for a post-up center like Monroe, probably as bad as it's ever been. So good luck moving him this weekend, Milwaukee.
Yeah, I like how the Lakers have gone from Wilt to Kareem to Shaq and now to Timofey Mozgov as their franchise centerpiece.
I wonder if Mozgov, he's probably getting paid more than any of those guys too, which is hilarious.
I'd be willing to bet. I think he's at like 15 or 16 mil 16, a year.
16 mil a year, yeah. 4 years, 64 million. Not my least favorite contract of the summer.
What is your least favorite?
Ryan Anderson, 4 years, $80 million.
Really? Okay.
I like Ryan Anderson, but $20 million a year? What is this, 2016, 17, 17, 18? In 2019, 20, I just do not see Ryan Anderson being worth $20 million.
Is he like 31 or somewhere in there?
I want to say it's something like that.
Yeah, I can see that. Daryl Morey, like with the Rockets, I can see how you'd fall in love with a guy like that. At least what I can say with Anderson, with respect to Mozgov, is that at least Anderson sort of is riding the wave of what a big man looks like now, whereas yeah. Mozgov, he doesn't really do much that you want. But I think within about 10 minutes of the Mozgov deal going down, which is, I think, the first deal free agency, all of the sort of NBA biosphere immediately was laughing at the Lakers for that.
Yeah. I mean, people have tried to justify it since, like, oh, he's a rim runner. Like, all right, so is Miles Plumlee.
Yeah.
Miles Plumlee's a much better rim runner, and he got less money for the same years. It was one of those deals where you just shake your head. Like, I could see justifications for the Evan Turner deal, sort of, some of these other ones. Even the Ryan Anderson one, which I still think it's a little ridiculous, but Ryan Anderson does offer a lot. He's great on 2K17 for whatever that's worth. The Mozgov deal is just like, come, this guy was a solid bench player who ended up completely losing his bench role in the playoffs last year. It's a little ridiculous.
Agreed. Even with the Plumlee deal, a lot of people are saying the Bucks overpaid, which I can sort of agree with. But I think the only reason that deal works for the Bucks is because of how sort of specialized he is to work with what the Bucks are trying to do, and that he doesn't need the ball down low. He'll just finish lobs, run around with a lot of energy, and he'll work well with Giannis. I think that's the only reason he really got paid by the Bucks.
Miles Plumlee is the DJ Khaled of the NBA. Whereas
how so?
DJ Khaled is rich and famous because he has a lot. He picked the right friends. Like, Drake works with him a lot. Like, Miles Plumlee and Giannis all the time talk about how much chemistry that pair has. Both Giannis and Miles Plumlee have said it. And that's why he has this contract, because he works really well in pick and rolls and rim running with Giannis. That's pretty much it. Like, if Miles Plumlee had showed up and made good friends with Tyler Ennis, he'd probably be in Houston or somewhere right now. Like, he picks his friends well, and it got him, I think, 50 or 52 million or whatever he ended up getting exactly. That's what it comes down to, though, is he had really good chemistry with the most important Buck, and the team was like, well, he's got to stay. He is the James Jones of the Bucks. They're like, we need him. He is important.
Yeah. You mentioned a little while ago how you can't play two bigs together, and I remember at the end, towards the end of last season, a lot of people, once Plumlee started working his way into the regular rotation, a lot of people wanted Kidd to go with like a Plumlee Henson lineup.
The regulators, they ran that for a while.
Any combination of two big men, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I believe he didn't do it often. When he did, it wasn't good. So that just goes to show you the new reality we live in.
Yeah, I think you're gonna see some of those lineups this year, just because. I mean, they have three centers, and the cheapest one is getting $12 million. But I don't like them. I really don't. With Middleton out, it makes a little more sense to go to him. But it makes more sense to just not have three centers in 2016, honestly. You just look at the value that a long wing, like a Trevor Ariza-type player, provides, where those guys can slot, cover three different positions probably. They can shoot the three. They can go inside, like, I'd rather see minutes with Trevor Ariza or someone like that at the four than Miles Plumlee or John Henson at the four or Greg Monroe. I just don't like it. I mean, they still didn't rebound extraordinarily well with those two guys. If I recall, they didn't do the crazy rebounding you'd expect, partly because none of the three are truly gifted rebounders. Henson, you think, would be the best. He looks from eye test to be like the longest, but I think it's actually Plumlee if you look at the percentages. I'm not positive. I haven't looked in a while. But none of them are knock your socks off. Tristan Thompson, Andre Drummond, good. Which is too bad, because the Bucks could really use a guy like that. I'd say Plumlee probably got overpaid, but yeah, it was strategic. He made good friends. He should work well with the team. He was a disaster in the first preseason game, but it was the first preseason game, so I don't really care that much. The one thing I did care about from that game is that Henson was the odd man out of the center lineup. He got the least minutes. If you look at just John Henson's history with the Bucks, they've never seemed to completely trust him. He's never earned a full-time starter role, despite being around for, I want to say, 4 full years now, playing on some pretty awful Bucks teams. Like, after Larry Sanders went out, it just seemed so just obvious. Like, of course, it's going to be John Henson's turn now. The only other guy on the roster is Zaza Pachulia. And lo and behold, Pachulia gets the job. And I like Zaza, not as much as Adam McGee, but I like Zaza. But, I mean, on that team, like, why not give the minutes to Henson? Let Zaza close games. Fine. He's the better closer. He's been here before. He's got playoff experience. But, like, give the young guy the starting role. And that's, like, his contract even sort of plays into that. Like, they gave him the money, so you can say they trust him based on that, but it's a descending value contract. It's not like they said, you know, take what you need, we trust you, we'll give you whatever you want. It goes down each year. Like, it's almost like the Bucks were like, just in case, you know, you're as unreliable as we think, we're not going to tie you up to the same amount or an increasing amount. We're going to be able to cut ties early. Like, it's just something about the way they've handled Henson, just to me at least personally, has always made it seem like they weren't sold on him. I could see a scenario where he gets sold because they're not sold on him.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that contract is it was signed after the Greg Monroe deal. So yeah. Even then it was clear, like, you're not going to be the man, even though he just paid you 40-some-odd million dollars. And, I mean, through his whole career, it's, I feel like every offseason we've been saying, and it's starting to tail off now, but every offseason people are saying, well, maybe if he just bulked up and, you know, worked on his hook shot, he could really be a force. But I think this year will sort of define what John Henson is in the NBA. We know what he's good at. He's one of the best rim protectors in the league in terms of blocking shots. And at times he'll go off for that game where he'll have like 22 points on like 8 of 11 shooting. And you'll say, see, this is a guy we need. And then other nights he'll have 3 points on 1 of 6 shooting, and you won't even notice he was on the court.
Yeah, he's the worst thing I think that we know of, and I'm still a little convinced that there's like some subtle signs that we're not seeing is the reason he's not gotten more run, because I mean, you look at his per 36 minutes numbers have been fantastic. When he gets more minutes in games, he tends to do better based on the numbers. But if you look at like he'll disappear. Like, the preseason game, the first one, I think he played 13 minutes, took and missed one shot. He had, like, 3 boards, an assist, and a block. No points. It's like, you know, he got on the box score a bit, sure, but he'll just have those games where you forget he's out there. That's exactly it. And it's, I think it's just tough to trust a guy like that to start, because you need your starters to give you something every night. Like, the Bucks aren't, like, they have the big three, sure, but they're not, like, Miami Heat 2011 big three where you can just, it doesn't matter what the other two guys do. Like, they still need contributions from all 5 players, the center especially, for all the pick and rolls and everything. So just, I feel like that's part of the concern with Henson, is just that he just disappears sometimes, and you just can't have that from an everyday starter.
That's the one thing I did like about Monroe last year, is that I'm like, okay, well, you know, he might not work great with the lineup, and he might let in more points than he produces, but you know he's going to be good for like 14 and 8 a night. And just showing up to the arena, you know he's probably good for that, and with a decent percentage as well. Which I think may be a pretty large reason why they'd be reluctant to move off of him as the starter. So if you see elements of that shining through in both Plumlee and Henson, once they get that chance, I think that's when you're really, really going to see the sort of culture shift on the Bucks center position.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Plumlee's got that the Henson-esque thing too, where there's some nights he'll score 2 points. But for some reason, it feels less disappointing when Plumlee does it. Maybe that's just because last year he was still seen as like this trade throw-in, who anything you got from him was a positive. That could change now that he's been paid. I know. I feel like that certainly happened with Henson, where after he got that deal, before it even kicked in, because it didn't kick in until this coming season, but like everyone knew he had signed it last year, the extension. I think that changed a lot about how people looked at Henson. Like, once you get the money, you're expected to, you can't take those nights off like that. You're certainly right. Monroe didn't do that. For all the negatives that were around Greg Monroe last year. Like, when they put him on the floor, he's going to go get his points. He's reliable in that sense, for sure. I think he's, at this point, been unfairly vilified by the Bucks fan base. It just seems excessive to hate Greg Monroe. He doesn't fit. He's still not a great fit even on the bench, just because, well, I mean, he's a center, so I guess he's not horrible, but just because they have three centers, it seems excessive to have him still. But credit to him for not being sour and saying, I need to get traded and all this. Like, from everything I've read, especially the Charles Gardner piece that came out yesterday, as you're listening to this, he's all about being energized for the season and playing his hardest, even though he probably realizes that'll be from the bench. Good for him. It's going to help the Bucks, and it'll help his trade value too. So if he still does want to get moved, not saying it is the best way to make it happen.
Yeah, I do appreciate that. His name's been in the rumor mill for
8 months,
yeah, since February. I haven't even heard so much of a peep out of him in terms of like a negative, like, why are they floating my name out there? I want to get traded. And I got to imagine that's tough to do. We've seen Michael Carter Williams sort of fire back, and I like what he said today about how just tune in and watch if you're a doubter. But I have to imagine that's really tough to do when you have a bunch of people who sort of hate you for something you're not necessarily even doing wrong.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever want to see some internet bios, just Twitter search Greg Monroe's name and any swear word of your choosing. It's not pretty. The thing about Greg Monroe for me, what was I going to say? I think I just forgot. There was like the high five gate thing last year where he didn't dap Chris Middleton, and then Chris and him got in that argument a few games later. I mean, that just comes with a losing season. And as much as you can say, this is the thing that really gets me, is that everyone knew what Greg Monroe was this whole time. No one expected him to shoot threes or play phenomenal defense, yet he gets ragged on for these things. If you look at it, like, the Bucks didn't deliver what they were supposed to Greg Monroe, not vice versa. Greg Monroe brought exactly what he was supposed to bring. Like, he did his Greg Monroe thing and got his 15-8 night in, night out. What the Bucks were supposed to give him was wins. Like, that's the entire reason he signed in Milwaukee, was to make the playoffs and be a good team, and the Bucks didn't do that. And obviously it's not actually in the contract thing, like, oh, well, you know, I get paid more now because we didn't win or anything like that. But if you just look at, like, the promises essentially made to each side, Greg Monroe brought his end of the bargain. The team, and part of that is because he didn't fit, but still, the team is the one who couldn't really deliver on the good season that everyone had hoped for.
I think a lot of that is, I don't think going into the offseason, not many Bucks fans expected to get a free agent like Monroe, at least of his caliber. And I think the reason a lot of people feeling sort of betrayed almost by what happened last year is that they were sort of blinded by, like, oh, wow, we got this guy. He's going to be great. We're going to be a top four seed. We're signing marquee free agents, and they didn't really stop to think, like, okay, well, how does he slot in? How's this going to work? It was just sort of where you just throw a bunch of talent on the court and it'll work itself out, and that it doesn't work that way in the NBA.
No, it was like the Nash Lakers. It just didn't work. It's too bad too, because it was exciting. I remember going into that summer and I was like, if we're lucky, we get Robin Lopez. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like, free agent, like, clout, basically, as a franchise. It was like, maybe if we make the right pitch, we can get Rallo. And Rallo would have been good for the team, nothing against Robin Lopez. But Monroe was just another class of free agent. Like, the other two teams trying to sign him were the Knicks and the Lakers, who typically have gone after the big guys and gotten them. This time it didn't go that way. It didn't work out for the Bucks, but I still think that's an important thing to look at going forward, is that small market and not even, like, unestablished franchises like the Bucks can get a guy like that if for the right pitch. Like, that's important these days, especially looking at how the Bucks could be looking coming into next summer if they're trying to add another piece.
I've sort of gone back and forth on this, and I'm gonna get your opinion. What do you think the Greg Monroe, the whole situation, means going forward for the Bucks getting those higher agents? Because on one hand, it's like, I mean, we've proven that we can go out and get these guys. But also, it didn't work out that well, and I feel like that might scare off some of the other guys that you're looking to bring in. I don't know what, like, the net effect of it might be.
I mean, I'm not too worried about it. I think the team hasn't looked horrible in the situation. Like, they didn't play good basketball, sure. But, I mean, there's more reasons than just Monroe. The team forgot to add a bench and basically traded their bench away when they went to get him. So that's sort of something you learn from. It would have been better if it never happened. But I don't think it's going to stop them from getting guys. I mean, you look at – they had a real meeting with Dwayne Wade, even though they didn't have the money, which I think sort of speaks to them still being a player. There was Dwight Howard interest. Apparently, according to Gus Johnson, Dwight Howard really wanted to be a Buck, which was one of those just really bizarre moments of the year, which there were a lot of them. I think if the fit was right and the Bucks had the money, which that might be the biggest problem going forward more than anything else, they could still get guys. I don't think the Monroe signing is going to kill that for them. I mean, look at this summer, they got Dellavedova and Teletovic pretty quickly. And those aren't Craig Monroe caliber free agents, but they're the guys the Bucks needed. I think honestly it might not be that big of an issue going forward, just because with the talent already in Milwaukee locked down, once they get Jabari extended or re-signed or whatever you want to say next, they won't have the money to go after a max guy unless something really strange happens with the salary cap. So it's just not something, considering all the other problems the Bucks have right now, I haven't really worried about it. I could see where a guy would go, oh, I don't want to be the next Greg Monroe, the guy who doesn't work out. But, I mean, there's still time to even turn that around and have Greg Monroe be a valuable contributor, even if he's a bench player for the Bucks for all or half or however long of the season.
Yeah, I think I wrote about this last week or a week and a half ago, whenever it was, how next offseason, assuming the Jabari extension gets done, which I have full confidence it will.
Yeah.
It's going to be less eventful, I guess would be the term to describe it. You might have in all likelihood, you're going to have a lottery draft pick, but you're not going to have the cap room, and you're not going to need to bring anybody to really play a major role. Maybe you look at like a backup small forward or just bench depth in general, but I think that's a good problem to have, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned or alluded to this before, that this core is very much locked in the foreseeable future. Henson and Plumlee are both signed for the next 4 years. Giannis is now signed for the next 4 years. Jabari will be signed. Dellavedova's got 4 years. Teletovic has 3 years. Middleton has either two in a player option or three in a player option. So, like, the main contributors of this core will be here for a while. And obviously you have, like, Rashad Vaughn and Malcolm Brogdon and Thon Maker will all be under team control for a while. Almost all of the important contributors that are here now will be here 2 or 3 years from now, barring trades or anything like that. The one thing about, especially if they end up in the lottery, is where I could see MCW either being traded or not re-signed, is that I've heard, and I haven't done the research yet, but I've heard that this upcoming draft class is very rich in point guards. Mm-hmm. If that's true, I could see the Bucks going with a cheaper option, because divisive as he may be, Michael Carter-Williams is going to get paid at least moderately well this coming summer. And again, there's going to be a new CBA by then, but it's not going to be a dramatic shift down for sure. So you're going to see him, someone will probably pay him. Like, what do the Nets have to lose from overpaying Michael Carter-Williams? Yep. Like, they can, like, fuck it. They have Jeremy Lin. Like, that. I read today the face of their franchise is Jeremy Lin, and I think Brook Lopez takes offense to that, but if those are the two guys fighting for it, you're not in a good place. Like, it doesn't matter what they do. They don't have draft picks. The next pick they'll use will be a Celtics pick, and now the Celtics are probably going to be the second-best team in the East. It's not looking good in Brooklyn, so they're going to be the team, I think, for the next few years, who are sort of your bugaboo if you have restricted free agents, because they're going to say, yeah, why not? Let's give Michael Carter Williams $70 million. Like, we don't need it. We have to get up to the salary floor anyway. Let's ball. I could see them trying to replace him through the draft and then trying to add, like you said, a forward, hopefully not another center, but certainly a wing player in general. Someone who can play 2 and 3 would be ideal. I could see them going after a guy like that and trying to spend the MCW money there. But it's hard to predict these things. Like, a number of things could happen. A trade could shift everything. Anything could, really. It's hard to predict a month from now in the NBA, much less a year. But I do think you're right in that this next offseason is not going to be a Greg Monroe caliber player being added, just because of financials, if nothing else.
Yeah, and sort of like a luxury we have almost is we have the major core pieces locked down. And I've sort of the mentality that between Vaughn, Brogdon, and Maker, anything you get out of those guys, obviously Maker's a fairly high pick, so he's going to be under a little bit of scrutiny. But anything you get out of those guys is sort of icing on the cake in that you weren't, at this point, I don't think Rashad Vaughn is being projected to be a large factor in the team's future by John Hammond or whoever's made the decisions. I don't think they have him penciled in as, all right, in 2 years we're going to need this guy to be playing, you know, 30 minutes a night. And, you know, I think that's a good element that it's sort of underlooked about this team.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we've seen a lot of Portland being heralded, like, oh, the Trailblazers are so smart because they have locked in their core and this and that. I mean, the Bucks have locked in their core, and I would argue, I think Portland's core has two star players, but I think as a whole, I don't know. I think I'd prefer the Bucks unit, honestly. Like, I think Dame and CJ are great. I think Jabari has a higher peak than Dame might have. I think Dame is, like I said, I like Dame, and this might sound ridiculous, but if you look at the money invested in both of these teams, the Trailblazers have no flexibility going forward. All of a sudden, they vaulted to number one in spending among all NBA teams. Unless they make trades, they can't do anything. I would rather have a little bit of flexibility in the Bucks core than no flexibility in the Blazers core. And, you know, the argument is, well, they can just trade guys instead of signing guys. Well, if Allen Crabbe sucks, you can't trade him for the deal you signed him to. If Evan Turner is a disaster in this offense, you can't just trade him for fair value. Like, you sign these guys for a lot of money. If they don't work out, you can't just, like, magically swap them for other good pieces. That's not how it goes. I could see the Trailblazers, you know, being fine with what they've done and being a good team for the next 3 years. I'd rather have the Bucks scenario where you get a little room to play with and these younger guys, but they're locked up too. And you just, I don't know, maybe that's homeristic of me, I'm not sure. But I just think if you're going to praise the Blazers for doing that, the Bucks should get some of that shine too.
And the thing about the Blazers, they've sort of got their core all assembled. Obviously, McCollum's young, but their guys are mostly all either in the middle of or approaching their prime. I think Evan Turner, you know what you're getting out of him. Obviously, Lillard's a superstar. McCollum still probably on the upturn, but he's you figure he's going to level off soon. At Harkless, we still don't know what we've got with him. But whereas with the Bucks, I mean, you've got sky high ceilings for Giannis and Jabari. I don't think Chris might not be at his peak yet. So I think you've got a lot more room to grow with the Bucks.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the Blazers will be better this year and maybe next year, but I think long term, the Bucks will have the better shot at winning a title out of the two teams. I wanted to talk a little bit about maybe not what we saw in the last preseason game. I kind of did that with Jordan Chesky on winning six already. I mean, it's a preseason game, but looking forward to the one tonight, which should be tonight as we post this, tomorrow night as we record this, it'll be the Bucks against the Mavericks. I think it's in Madison.
Think it should be, yeah.
And I think this is the one preseason game that gets televised on FS Wisconsin. So tune in to listen to probably Marcus and somebody call this game, and we'll get to watch it, which is cool. I'm not going to ask you where you watched the last one. I don't want to know. What are you looking forward to in this game? Thon will be back. Andrew Bogut will be back in Wisconsin, if not Milwaukee. So that'll be fun to watch. Are you most excited to watch Thon play with the Bucks for the first time since Summer League or the scrimmage or whatever or something else?
I think I'm most excited to watch Thon. I want to see him get some burn tonight. I don't know who that comes at the expense of, but I definitely want to see him out there. I want to see Giannis sort of – he played decent last game. I mean, 12 points, 2 assists. I mean, I feel like he still wasn't the spearhead of the offense in that he's being paid to be. And I think I want to see that because I think that will sort of unlock Plumlee and prevent him from having the game that he had last time. But I think mostly I just want to see Thon out there. I want to see if he's ready, if he's not, if it's the car wreck. I just want to see.
Yeah, I want to see Malcolm Brogdon be a shooting guard instead of a point guard. I feel like part of the reason Giannis didn't rack up assists is that they're really trying to see if Malcolm Brogdon can be a point guard. Which maybe he can. To me, it's still so weird that they're like obsessed with this. He was not a point guard at Virginia. What they need right now is a shooting guard, not a point guard, but still it's like, maybe this guy's a point guard. Well, who cares? You have Giannis, you have Dellavedova, you don't need a point guard. You have Jet, you have Michael Carter Williams. So I'd love to see a facsimile of what we'll see on opening day starting, maybe with Thon instead of Plumlee just for fun. But I'd really like to see Dellavedova, Brogdon, Giannis, Jabari, Plumlee line up at some point just to see how it works, because like apparently there could be a trade coming. Either way, the Bucks need to figure out who's going to be their starting two guard very quickly by the end of this month. So that should probably become a priority instead of can Malcolm Brogdon play point guard, which if he can, great. Who cares? They have Jet who can play point guard, who's 6'2", should not be relied upon as a shooting guard. Also, Michael Carter-Williams, hello. Remember, he was supposed to be like the point guard of the future at one point. He's still here for now. I don't know. It's just the whole thing's weird to me. I'd like to see Brogdon played more at his wing position and see how he fits with the rest of the starters. I'd hope to see that. But yeah, obviously Thon too. I'm such a big Thon fan. I think he's like, seems like he's a great kid. He's got the personality for it and he's got the tools. Like, I always forget this when I'm talking Bucks with people, but if Thon Maker develops, like he might, like this team could be ridiculous.
Unlike these other prospects, which I've mostly heard of the beginning this spring, Thon Maker, most people have probably seen the YouTube videos of him going back 4 or 5 years, even maybe back when he was 14-15 years old. I remember thinking like, wow, this guy's gonna revolutionize basketball. And obviously I'm aware it doesn't look like that at this point. It hasn't been that dynamic, but like you said, he's the one guy that, despite like all the controversy we've had about him after the draft at this age and whatever, he's the one guy a lot of people I think are overlooking. And like you said, if he develops, the Bucks are already a weird team. If Thon becomes a regular contributor, the Bucks would become, in my opinion, one of the weirdest teams in NBA history.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, imagine if Thon is the stretch five that some people envision him to be. Like 3 years from now, Dellavedova, Middleton, Giannis, Jabari, Thon. Like that lineup could be Warriors-esque. And that's obviously way ahead of ourselves. Way ahead of ourselves. We've never seen Thon play real NBA minutes. But hypothetically, if he turned out like people are hoping, like that's one of those lineups where you just go, what the fuck do we do about this team? Like how do we, they can switch pretty much anyone. They can shoot. They can all shoot except maybe Giannis, maybe Jabari. I think Jabari is going to be shooting better this year. But it's exciting to think about. I don't want to focus on it because like there's realistic good players here already to get excited about. Probably shouldn't count out chickens before they hatch. But it could be very, very exciting.
Yeah, I feel like Jabari is more likely to turn into a good three-point shooter than Giannis is. I think he's just built more. It's more conducive, his body type. But I do think one of those two, in all likelihood, will become a good three-point shooter. And I think that's what's really going to take this team to the next level. If you've got both these guys, you know, 3 years down the road, still can't shoot, I mean, that's fine. You can still win with that. But if one of those guys can shoot, or if both of those guys can shoot, then you're talking about a next-level offense.
I mean, my favorite Jabari stat recently is that, well, two of them are one post-break, so for the entire point Giannis after the All-Star break. Jabari was the one who led the team in scoring, quiet as it's kept. The second one is that he actually shot like 31 or 32% from three in that stretch, which is closer to his college percentage of 35. I think Giannis's shooting problems seem so mental. Like he was a good three-point shooter his first year in the NBA, then just fell apart. Jabari, I think his pedigree, both physically and mentally, is like just pristine. He'll figure it out. He's going to be the great scorer we all expected when he got drafted. I would not be surprised if he hit 34% of his threes this year. I could see him doing worse, but I would not be shocked by that.
Yeah, Giannis shot it pretty well in Olympic qualifying this year. I think he was 5-for-8 at one point through a couple games. And like you mentioned, post All-Star break with Jabari, I think it's safe to say that trend was because of what Giannis became post All-Star break, which is really exciting to think about when you consider that he's got a whole offseason, and now it looks like we're going to have a whole season of that continuing. So I agree with what you said. Jabari could shoot 34%, depending on what he's been working on this summer. But I think the main thing for Jabari to start making threes is just to start taking them. I think we've still seen a reluctance on his part to pull the trigger when he's out there. And you can say maybe that's because Jason Kidd, like he did with Giannis, told him last year, hey, don't shoot the three until you build your out skills up, just so you're well-rounded. But I think just actually having him shoot is the number one hurdle you've got to get over in terms of making him a good shooter.
Yeah, I think part of that is true with Giannis too, but I think Jabari has more of a chance, you're right. Do you mind if I run you through some quick rapid-fire questions before we get going?
Sure.
Do the Bucks make the playoffs this year?
No.
I think maybe. Zach Lowe wrote that they could, so maybe they can. Zach Lowe's never wrong. No. Uh-huh. I could see it. I still don't think I think there's a lot of questions about some of the bottom of the East teams, but Middleton was underratedly consistent. It would not surprise me if they had just like they had a shot and then they had like an awful February or an awful March and fell out. Like it seems like one of those where there'll be like an up and down team, like Giannis and Jabari will hit a roll and they'll be great, and then one or both of them will have a bad week and they just suck. So I could see something like that happening.
I know it's early, but right now I'm thinking my prediction somewhere around 35 wins, which I don't think gets you into the playoffs.
No, I don't think that makes it either. Before injury, I had them like tops, like mid to low 40s, 44 if they really all clicked, maybe like 47 if Giannis is like this all-pro player and Jabari starts scoring a lot more. It's real. Unless they made a good trade, which, fingers crossed, knock on wood. I don't know if that's going to be a thing, but we'll see. So yeah, I'm. If I had to bet, I'd probably be with you, even though I want to be positive. I like positive thinking. I'm not sure on that one. Does anyone stop the Warriors this year?
I got to say no. I mean, just the way it looks right now, I don't think there's any way anyone can stop them.
Did you see the clips from that Clippers game?
I just saw that they were up, I think, 50 points at one point.
They were, before the starters went out in the third quarter, at that point the Warriors were up like 88 to 30-something. And Doc was salty after the game. Doc was like, we showed up to play preseason and they were taking it too serious. Like, come on, Doc.
I don't think you're going to see the Warriors surpass their win total from last year.
No, they don't want to. They've said this much.
Yeah, I mean, just regression towards the mean. I think maybe with all the stars they've got, you can rest some guys. They weren't really affected by injuries that much last year, so I don't think they win 73 or 74, but I think the Spurs have gotten, if they haven't gotten worse, they've stayed complacent. The Cavs have stayed at around the same. I don't think any team's close to them right now.
If they do lose, it won't happen until the NBA Finals. The only team I could see beating them is the Cavs. Just because, like, LeBron is so good. Like, before last finals this year, I would have said they're winning it all. But after this, he had the greatest finals performance of all time. Like, he was untouchable in the 2016 NBA Finals. Normally, I would say a player could never do that twice. It's LeBron. I'm not putting anything out of reach. But I don't see any team in the West challenging them. The Clippers, if they finally clicked, which it seems like they never really have, which is possible, but still I'm not. They still don't have a good small forward. Like, you can't start Luke Ricard and Bamute and expect to beat the Warriors. Like, sure, he's a fine player, but he's not. Like, you need someone good at all five positions to beat the Warriors. I don't think the Clippers have that still, which it's been so long. Like, you've had so long to figure this out. And they, we've never had the cap space to, like, figure something out. Come on. Like, look at all the guys the Cavs have. Look at all the guys the Warriors brought together in, like, a week. Like, they were like, yeah, let's get David West and Zaza Pachulia and all these other guys. They'll want to come play here. Like, the Clippers aren't as good as the Warriors, but they've been good. Like, they need to have found someone better by now, especially when you're looking at who we're going to match up against Kevin Durant. Oh, we've got Mbamute. Oh, okay, good series.
Yeah, especially when your owner purchased the team for $2 billion, I think. I don't think the money should be an issue. With the Cavs matching up against the Warriors, I've sort of gotten the sense, and maybe it's because of the whatever year it was they played them in the finals, I don't think LeBron is scared of Durant. I think LeBron is scared of Steph. Which seems backwards, you know, just from looking at him. But I think LeBron, there was an article in Sports Illustrated in the middle of last season about how desperate LeBron was about winning this year, because he saw sort of the future that the Warriors were going to be this dynasty. And I think he really saw that in the finals last year with how good he was. But I don't think LeBron is scared of Kevin Durant. And I think maybe that's what gives them a chance in the finals.
That's an interesting take, and I like that. I think there's, I feel like, I don't think he's afraid of either of them. I think you do have a point. I think going into that finals, I don't know if I want to say afraid of. I don't know, like, if LeBron listens to this, I don't want him to, like, swat block everything I try to do in life.
I'm sorry, LeBron. I'm sorry.
Yeah, apologize to LeBron. But I think he felt that people believe that Steph was coming for him in terms of the best player, and some people would believe he surpassed him. I think that drove LeBron to literally just block that entire notion with a couple blocks he had on Steph. And I've never seen LeBron jaw at somebody like he jawed Steph in that finals. I think it is different, because I feel like people always sort of just put Kevin Durant in a lower level. I mean, there's all the playoff stuff with Durant, Mr. Unreliable from that's multiple years ago now with OKC. I don't think LeBron's ever been terrifically worried just because of, it's hard to say this kind of, like, I don't want to say killer instinct and all this corny, overused, like, clickbait wordage and all this, but I do think there was something different mentally in it for LeBron last year, and I think maybe instead of individual players, it might be a team thing this year. Maybe it's different because LeBron's finally won his Cleveland ring. I don't know. It's going to be weird to watch. That could take a little fire out of his belly, but I just don't see LeBron not bringing it, especially if it's at the NBA Finals.
I know this is really off topic, but
I'm here for this.
I wake up. This is exaggeration, but I wake up once a week in a cold sweat, just thinking that at one point the Oklahoma City Thunder had Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Serge Ibaka, and somehow nothing came of that.
Reggie Jackson
too. I mean, obviously at the time he was backup, but they had so much talent together in one place in a small market team, all, you know, acquired through like the draft.
Yeah,
and just nothing came of it. And I think that's underlooked.
It's ridiculous. I mean, this is why, and everyone said I was an asshole for this, and I was. But when Durant left this summer, but they still had, you know, Westbrook, and they had gotten Oladipo, and they still had Steven Adams, and everyone on Twitter was like, oh, poor Thunder, they lost Kevin Durant. Like, I posted a picture of, since Westbrook and Durant had played together in OKC, all the players who had led the Bucks in win share, and it's like Ersan, Brandon Knight, Greg Monroe, Ersan again, and I was like, I don't feel bad for them at all. They had 8 years of Westbrook and Durant together. During that 8-year span, the Bucks have been almost exclusively trash. Like, Monta Ellis and Brandon Jennings were a high point for like a decade. Like, I don't feel bad for them because they did have all those players, but it is a little sobering to look at what was on their roster and the fact that they never got a ring out of it. I mean, they were consistently good, but the fact that they never managed to get a ring out of that is a little astounding.
I completely agreed.
I feel like I had one more rapid fire, but now I can't remember what it was.
Oh, I got one for you.
Okay, here we go.
Giannis Antetokounmpo, all-star or not?
Ooh, that is a good one. Let me think for a second about the rest of the Eastern Conference all-stars. Nobody's really came in the division that wouldn't have been factoring in as a wing last year. Kevin Durant stayed in the West. You're going to see LeBron, obviously, Paul George. But as far as other wings go, I mean, I could see Jimmy Butler having a poor year because they're going to play him out of position all year. Dwayne Wade probably still gets in, especially now that Middleton's not there to harass him. I think so. I think he's going to come out, and even if he has a slight regression, if he averages like 17-6-6, I'm not really sure how you keep him out of there. And he could average even more than that. So I think even though it's hard for guys to get in for the first time, I think it's going to be even harder for them to not vote him in or select him or whatever they want to do.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe it's a little bit biased that I just want him to get in so bad, but I think all he's got to do is play so well that people will get mad if he's not put in the game. And yeah. And what helps him is the new designation where you don't have to have a center. You can have three forwards, which, and who knows, maybe he makes it as a guard, which I don't think he's a guard, but depending on how they classify it, he could even possibly get in that way.
Yeah. The thing that hurts him though is without Middleton, the Bucks will be worse, and it's always harder to get in from a bad team.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I hope so. I think Middleton should have last year, but as I told Adam right away when he brought it up, he won't because the Bucks are bad, and Middleton is always going to be less flashy than Giannis. That'll help Giannis. But if the Bucks are lottery bound from the jump, it's going to be tough. But I mean, if he's really good, like if he's like, well, I think he was 18-7-7 or 18-8-8 or something like that after the break, plus like 2 blocks and a steal. No one's ever averaged that for an entire season, his line after the All-Star break. If he does something like that in the first half, I don't see how you keep him out, even if the Bucks are 0-40 or something. Like, that's just like, if you're that good of a player, I think you should be there.
Yeah, that's that. You're getting up into like LeBron territory when you're averaging, you know, upwards of 18-7-7, and just stealing the block added on. I mean, I think Brandon Knight was the closest thing we've had to an All-Star since Michael Redd. But yeah, I'm all in on Giannis making the All-Star game next year.
And maybe Jabari Most Improved Player.
Yeah, I could see that.
That's in the realm of possible. They like giving it to young guys, and especially, I mean, he's never had like a real full season. Obviously, the injury his first year started slow last year, so that'll be in his favor. He finally gets a full off season and a full season to work in. I could see him dropping 17, 18 points a game, and they love doing this basic evaluation of stats for the award. Like, look, he went from 14 to 18. He got so much better. Like, usually that annoys me, but if it's for a buck, I'm like, fine. Yeah, absolutely.
I think the challenge for him might just be creating a lot of buzz around the league, because I feel like he's still not that recognized in the NBA circles, even though how hyped he was, you know, coming into the draft or coming out of high school. I think that injury sort of made people forget about him. So I think that might be a bigger challenge than just improving on the court.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. I think that part of that even, I mean, Giannis is just so flashy, it helps, but just like being around the Bucks, especially if they tie together 2 straight losing seasons, it'll make it tougher for all of those things, which is a damn shame.
Mm-hmm.
I think we covered a lot of Bucks stuff for now, though.
Yeah.
Enough for the moment. Let me do my quick shout out to Joey Burbs, who I gave shit for not making enough music recently. Now, apparently he's going to do a new song today as you're reading this. It's going to be dope. He better do it. At Joey Burbs on Twitter, soundcloud.com/Joey Burbs, joeyburbs.com. He does the intro and outro music for Time Out with Ty. The first one and now the newest one, which is a sample of In Demand, his song. He's dope. Go check him out. Check out behindthebuckpass.com for more stuff from both of us. Check out Adam's Twitter at @a_coffee4.
That's it.
Yes, I didn't look it up before this podcast. That only comes from tweeting out articles. I'm so proud of myself. But go follow Adam. He's got a lot of dope stuff. Follow me too if you want, at Ty Windish. Thanks for coming on, Adam. I thought it was a great podcast. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, had a lot of fun.
I'll talk to you later, my man.
Yep, all right, see you.